Hi, everybody. My name is Susie Castor Southworth, and I'm very excited to bring some training to you today about self-esteem. We are going to talk to a very educated expert on this area, somebody that's done tons of training, and I want to tell you a little bit more about him. He's an internationally acclaimed personal development trainer, a life-changing success coach, and best-selling author of 9 books and 2 tape sets on topics ranging from how to achieve business success, personal and leadership development, to restoring self-esteem and maximizing business productivity. He's an acclaimed speaker and course leader. He's known for his work in supporting people to increase their self-esteem, team building, leadership development, listening and communication skills, life and business coaching, and optimal life planning. I want to introduce you to Dr. Joe Rubino. Joe, are you on the call with us today?
I am, Susie. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Great. I really have a few more things I want everyone to know about you. I just wanted to make sure you were with us. We are going to cover what's called 15 common myths about self-esteem. So I really want people to be thrilled and listening. And I've also worked with you personally with my team and gotten so many benefits from it. I want people to know that in addition to all the work that you've done, training in self-esteem and business planning and helping people to increase their listening and communication skills, that many of your best-selling books are on tapes and are available in 19 languages and in 48 countries. These include the Self-Esteem Book, The Ultimate Guide to Boost the Most Important Ingredient for Success and Happiness in Life. And that's what we're going to spend a little bit more time on today with Dr. Joe Rubino. He's the CEO for Center for Personal Reinvention, and that's a website that you're going to be able to get to. We're going to give you that address today. It is centerforpersonalreinvention.com. It's an organization committed to the personal excellence and empowerment of all people. He's impacted the lives of more than 1 million people through self-esteem work, personal and group coaching, and personal and leadership development. Dr. Rubino was featured on the cover of Success Magazine, and in their cover story, We Create Millionaires, for his ability to impact people's lives. He's a certified success coach in life planning technology and co-developer of the life-changing course, Conversations for Success. That's a program that provides participants with the tools to maximize their self-esteem, productivity, and personal effectiveness with others. I can't say enough great things about that course and his work. Joe's vision is to personally impact the lives of 20 million people to be the best, to shift the paradigm around resignation. That is, that anyone can affect positive change in their own lives and in the lives of others if they believe they can. We're going to give you more information on how to reach Dr. Joe, but in case you have your pens and pencils handy right now, you can contact him toll-free at 888-821-3135. And he also has a website that is www.theselfesteembook.com. All right, Joe, let's get right into it. I know people are chomping at the bit to get to the meat of this, and it's such an important tool in all of our business and personal relationships. 15 common myths about self-esteem. Let's start with the first. Number one, only the very poor, the homeless, the criminal elements of society suffer from very low self-esteem. Joe, can you talk about this a little bit more?
Sure, Susie. That is a very strong myth that has absolutely no validity to it. As a matter of fact, there have been studies and much research conducted that shows that more than 85% of us through all walks of life suffer from diminished self-esteem in one area or another. Now, some people have pervasive diminished self-esteem where they don't feel good about themselves in all areas of life, from their appearance to their relationships to their ability to succeed in business to their ability to just be happy and produce a result in any area. And others suffer only from situational self-esteem in one or more areas where someone, for example, might be competent in business but maybe terrible in relationships. They might be wonderful in sports but maybe have intimacy problems and feel terrible about themselves in that arena. So there are many different ways that low self-esteem and unworthiness show up, but it is absolutely not the homeless, the criminal elements, or, you know, the most debilitated and the poorest of our people that suffer from it. We all have our own degree of diminished self-esteem, and that affects all of our lives in different ways.
Wow, that's an amazing point. And I think we start right off on the bat missing that one big time when we look at, like you said, some of the most effective sports and business people that we look towards. Let's move on to a second. Keep in mind that these are common myths, because I think this is something that a lot of people really think is true. The quest to attain perfection is a valuable drive that keeps people moving forward on the path to success. Joe, why would you put that in your myth category?
Well, Susie, you know, we have it that we are not perfect. And in our society, we look at the idols that we have, the people that we place on our pedestals, as something to strive for, our movie stars, our sports athletes, our TV personalities, all of the people that are beautiful people, that have the looks, that have the brains, that have the charisma that we all strive for. But when we measure ourselves against these icons of perfection, we always somehow come on the short end. We don't measure up. And so the quest for us to be perfect is an unending quest where we do whatever we can to try to be this image of perfection, but because we can never attain the image, which, you know, we don't know what it's like in that movie star or that sports personality's real life, where they have relationship problems, where they have self-esteem issues as well. And all we see is the facade. We see the false image that they want us to see that holds them in a good light. And so this quest to achieve perfection keeps us from being fulfilled, because it's really an impossible quest. It's the sort of thing that no matter how hard we try, we somehow can never get to that area of perfection. We can never be that person who is all of the great qualities, who's flawlessly beautiful or handsome.
Exactly, and I could see where that's going to keep a lot of people from attaining the peace that they're searching for at any point in their life, that search for perfection. Here's another key element that comes into it. What about those of us who feel like, okay, I'm going to be a product of my environment? In other words, if our parents have low self-esteem, are we going to have it too?
Well, Susie, oftentimes when our parents have low self-esteem, they communicate those values and their actual expectations upon their children. And so their children always are affected to some degree by their low self-esteem, but it's not a one-to-one correlation. In other words, just because parents suffer from low self-esteem, it does not mean that the children need to as well. And because we're all our own individuals and we all make up different scenarios about our lives. And as a matter of fact, in some of the poorest families, in some of the most disadvantaged families, the children grow up to have high self-esteem because they surmount their challenges. They feel good about what they've done. They feel as though they've accomplished something. And there are so many elements that go into the makeup of either high or lower self-esteem that parental influence, although very critical, is only one of those factors. In addition to how our parents see us, and either they champion us, they edify us, they make us feel good about ourselves, or perhaps they're not there to the extent that they can do those things, or they don't have those skills or those abilities. And if not, then we make up what we make up about ourselves and our ability to succeed in the world. But here's the good news, and that is that any of us, no matter what our backgrounds, can actually create high self-esteem on purpose by following many of the principles that we talk about in my book and in our courses and in our coaching programs. So it's not the sort of thing that if you're born into a family with low self-esteem, you're stigmatized for life and you're stuck with that. I want to go back and say one more thing about the second point, Susie.
I just want people to revisit that and know that in context we're talking about that a lot of times we think the quest to attain perfection is a valuable drive that keeps people moving forward on the path to success.
Yes, and I wanted to talk just briefly about the whole notion of being driven. One of the downsides of diminished self-esteem, where people are constantly striving to be perfect, striving to achieve in business, striving to get ahead in their jobs, striving to be better than they see themselves. Now, that has positive elements to it in that it motivates us to be self-propelled, to move in a forward direction. But it also creates a scenario where we never find fulfillment or happiness if we're driven to that perfection, which is unattainable. It's kind of like climbing a ladder that reaches into the clouds, and we think that once we get to the top of the ladder, we'll have arrived and we'll be there. We'll seek that perfection. But what happens is when we get to the top of that ladder, we see that the ladder continues on to the next set of clouds, and we keep climbing and climbing and climbing, and just kind of like a rat on a treadmill, we never get there because we're in search of a goal that is really unattainable. You know, excellence is attainable, perfection is not. And so one of the most common side effects of lack of self-esteem, even in very successful people, people who have amassed wealth or who have been very successful in business or in life, is this fact that even though they've amassed the riches and the wealth, they still don't feel good about themselves to the point where they can rest, where they can stop and enjoy their accomplishments, where they can actually feel the rewards of getting where they want to be. They're always driven to do more and more and more, and that's just a lose-lose proposition.
Exactly. I mean, that I know that we could probably spend a whole 45 minutes just going more into that concept. And I love the words that you said about enjoying the rewards and experiencing fulfillment and satisfaction, and that while you're still along the journey, while you're still moving forward, just have some wonderful things to say about that. And I really encourage people to make sure that when they finish listening to what you have to say, that they get a hold of some of your material. Let's revisit the parenting concept, because I'm not so sure that we've really covered all of the myths that people hold about that. We talked about the parents, if they have low self-esteem, that we are a product of that. If your parents have low self-esteem, you'll have it too. But there's another point that I know it's important to make. A lot of us have wonderful parents and really thank them for what they've done. But one of the myths that we have on our list is it's usually the parents' fault if their children have self-esteem issues. Did you want to address that one?
Sure, Susie. Oftentimes, most often as a matter of fact, it has absolutely nothing to do with the parents being at fault when children develop these self-esteem issues. And that's because something happens that really is unintentional. If the parents treat the child poorly, if the child is abused, then, you know, there's some fault involved. But in most cases, what happens is someone says or does something that has the child feel poorly about themselves, not because they bought into someone else's low opinion of them, like a parent calling a child stupid or something like that, but something just very innocent. For example, a very common occurrence is when two parents become divorced and the child blames him or herself and feels as though the parents are becoming divorced because there's something wrong with the child. And so the child grows up thinking that not only are they at fault, but they're bad, that they've caused this horrible thing to happen, and they go around with all of this guilt. And so parents could speak to the child, they could reassure the child that it has nothing to do with the child, that both parents love the child, and all of that, but the child still could hold on to these misinterpretations. You know, another example is when a sibling is born. When a child going through life all happy and things are rosy, and then all of a sudden a little brother or sister comes on the scene. And so the little boy or girl makes up that they must not be enough for their parents. They must not be good enough. And so maybe they rebel. Maybe they become the problem child. And that further creates an alienation between the child and the parents, where the parents now maybe, just because they have a new little baby, they're close to the baby, the older brother or sister sees them showing love and affection to the baby, and the whole thing just continues to grow where either the child becomes resigned or the child acts out in aggressive ways, perhaps. And either of those two reactions often limit the ability of the child to attract the type of energy that the child's looking for, and so the child feels more and more reinforcement that something is wrong. But, you know, this sort of thing can happen in the most innocent of circumstances. Kids make things up. Kid will ask for a toy for a holiday present and maybe receive a sweater instead. And as a result of that, then the child makes up that they're not good enough because they didn't get the toy. And so there are literally thousands and thousands of different interpretations that cause children to initially feel unlovable, unworthy, or not good enough in some way. And oftentimes, it has nothing to do with the parenting skills of the parents. It has nothing to do with what they did or said. And all that parents can do is to do their best to show their children that they love them and they appreciate them and that they hold them as worthy and magnificent in all areas. That typically will support children to work through any conflicts that they have in these areas and be able to manage any self-esteem issues as they come up, as they get older, and they can work through them through work like the type that we do at the Center for Personal Reinvention.
Exactly. Well, I love what you had to say about that, and especially you're closing it with, you know, the parents are going to do the best they can and that loving them and championing them is Wonderful. And I've been through several of the Conversation for Success courses, and I've definitely had to work at reinterpreting that spanking I got when I was 3 years old, too. But now I'm just making light of it. It's fantastic work. But what makes me think of the courses and the work that I've done with you, Joe, is that when we have another participant that can't remember the traumatic event of their childhood, and they feel like, well, then is there a way for me to heal and move past some of the trouble that I'm having and my interpretations? So that brings us to our fifth point. What if they can't remember a traumatic event in their childhood and they have no way to heal from the troubled past?
Let me go back for a moment and say that if someone does recall a traumatic event from their childhood that continually bothers them, that steals their energy and has them feel poorly about themselves or what happened to them, or how they responded to a situation, that it is important to go back and to clean up their interpretation of what happened there and to support them to move forward by healing that past. But many times, people just totally shut out what happened in their childhoods, and they don't recall the exact events of what transpired in a way that they can't go back and heal those areas. But it doesn't really matter, because the same upsets that happened to all of us when we were children, we continually repeat over and over and over again, and each time reinforcing how we see ourselves and further damaging our self-esteem levels, because we go into those same emotional responses. We become angry and then perhaps sad or afraid. And so the upset that we initially interpret about ourselves being not good enough, being not unworthy or unlovable, we go and recreate that same interpretation on a daily basis in our lives. We pick the sort of person to be in relationship with who brings that stuff up for us. You know, we create problematic communications with others. We create fights and harmful relationships that keep us stuck and keep us feeling sorry for ourselves, or keep us in that angry state, or keep us being afraid and fearing risking because we feel like we are unable to achieve all of the good things in life and be where we want to be in the world. So all of these things in the work that we do with people, we support them to live what we call an upset-free life, which is really to be emotionally free of their reactions, to really start to pay attention to their moods and how they react to things in such a way that they can take the false interpretation that keeps them stuck and keeps them in that angry state or in that sad or in that fearful state. They can remove that and they can move on. So it's absolutely a myth that if you can't remember your childhood, you have to stay stuck with whatever damage was done. It's in fact very often possible within an hour session to really clear up years of pain or years of struggle or any of the challenges that we might have been through in our earlier years.
Absolutely, and I've seen you do that work in your courses. It's truly amazing and so supportive, again, in your business relationships as well as the relationships with your closest friends and family. So 15 common myths about self-esteem. Your point number 6, your self-esteem level is unrelated to your level of success in life. Can you address that, Joe?
Sure, Susie. Your self-esteem level is absolutely related to not only your success, but your ability to achieve happiness, fulfillment, and to really support others to be the best that they can be. And that is because when we feel poorly about ourselves, we have an expectation of failure. We have an expectation that our life will not be all the things that we want for ourselves. And so what happens with that expectation to not succeed or to fail or to have struggles is we actually bring them about. We sabotage our success. We do things that bring about relationship struggles and conflicts, and all of that ends up in us being right about not expecting to have and be and do the things that we all want in life. And so the bottom line is that if we don't have that high self-esteem, we will sabotage ourselves. We won't have the self-motivation that is so necessary to move us forward on the path to realizing fulfillment, rich relationships, happiness, wealth, health, fun, all of those things that we want, because we will find a way to jeopardize all of those things out of not feeling worthy or not feeling competent enough or smart enough or pretty enough or whatever each person's particular diminished version of self-esteem is. It will keep them from moving forward in a way that they can really have it all and be fulfilled. And the good news is that that is entirely preventable and entirely correctable.
Joe, you make such valuable points, and I just want to remind people that we're talking to Dr. Joe Rubino, and we're covering the 15 common myths about self-esteem, and you can reach Joe at both of his websites, Center for Personal Reinvention, as well as his website that addresses the book that we're talking about today, the self-esteem book, The Ultimate Guide to Boost the Most Important Ingredient for Success and Happiness in Life. That website is www.theselfesteembook.com. Joe, I love what you've just touched on, especially when you're talking about becoming healthier individually for our own satisfaction and fulfillment, but as well as to support others. That's such a, I think, an important challenge for us all to take on. And the myth number 7 that we're going to talk about is really pivotal. I think so many people have heard or even practiced and embraced themselves, but this is a myth, if you could put it into context for us. It makes no sense to spend any amount of time on one's troubled past. After all, it's the future, not the past, that's important.
The reason why that's a myth is that even though it is important to have a positive expectation for the future, and it's important to assess your present so that you can move powerfully and boldly to create that future in choice, if we have incomplete issues, if we have things that still steal our energy, if we have people that we can't be with from our past that we're still troubled by, we still are hounded by fights with them or how they treated us or how we treated them, all of those things rob us of our ability to be present, and they steal our energy. And as long as our energy is on the past of suppressing, trying to forget about these problems, the more we resist the whole thing of coming up, the more it persists for us, the more it stays present. And so the alternative to ignoring it like it doesn't exist, even though it steals all of our energy and our attention, it robs us of that joy that's possible for us in life, is to actually complete it. And through the work that we do, it's very easy many times to just reframe what happened to us, to recreate a new history. Even though the facts remain the same in our past, our interpretation, how we remember them, changes. And so with the work that we do, we can oftentimes clear up that so that it absolutely goes away. It no longer bothers us, and what had been troubling for 30, 40, 50 years of our lives is just as like, it's as if it never happened when people are able to complete and heal that area. That's really a powerful place to go for people that are still troubled.
Absolutely. Let's move on to myth number 8. Successful and wealthy people do not typically suffer from self-esteem issues.
Like I mentioned earlier, Susie, self-esteem issues can affect people from all walks of life, from all socioeconomic backgrounds, from all races and religions. It really is the one unifying factor around the world where we are prone to feeling poorly about ourselves. And so oftentimes those people who are most successful and most wealthy have sacrificed their relationships or their fun to be driven, as we discussed a little bit earlier, to really achieve those things, to make them feel good about themselves in one area of life at least. You know, how often do you see the rich old recluse in the mansion, you know, with no friends, having all the physical possessions, and, you know, the person's only contact is a butler or a maid or something of that nature? That's kind of like the cliche in the movies about, you know, the person that really has achieved the wealth but nothing else. And so oftentimes these very ultimately successful, ultimately wealthy and prosperous people, they're not honoring their values. They're not living their life rules that are important to them, because what they've done is they've sacrificed those things that are really important, like the rich relationships, like the love and the intimacy and the close relationships with family and with friends, in order to devote to their businesses and to move their lives forward in a way that they could have that temporary satisfaction of accomplishment and achievement. And so with those people, it's very gratifying where we can show them how it's never too late to have it all. Just because they've gone through life in a certain way, they can start, and anyone can start who's listening to my voice right now, this day forward, to move forward, to really start designing one's future in choice and not based on the evidence that they've created from a painful past.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can't edify enough the tools that you provide, as well as the work that I've seen personally in your courses. And the velocity, you know, some of the things that are so easy to overcome. And like you said, that you'll sit with someone and maybe in a one-hour session, work through some things that have been troubling them for the last 30 years. There are definitely tools you want to have available to you now, and that you want to get to team members and family members as early in life as possible. Myth number 9, your level of self-esteem is fixed for every area or aspect of your life. Can you comment on that?
Sure, and that is a myth, Susie, because not only is it not fixed, but it is so able to be impacted when you know how to do that. And the great thing about the work that is possible for people is that whatever that area is, if it's their wealth and their finances, their ability to be successful at work or in their occupation or in their profession or entrepreneurially, or if it's their relationships that have been a struggle and a source of pain and discomfort, whether it's their fun factor missing, their passions and their hobbies not there that they're out of touch with, whether their health is failing because they've internalized the pain of low self-esteem and the struggle of relationships and it's manifested as disease, or if they're on that track, if they catch it early enough, that can be reversed. So each of the different areas of life are anything but fixed. And what we found is that oftentimes when we do this sort of work with people, it's like lifting the weight off of their shoulders that they've been carrying for decades, literally, where it's, like you said, in the course of an hour, oftentimes, we can cause people to see insights and have breakthroughs that actually shift how they've held themselves for years, how they hold other people, how they hold their relationship to happiness and fulfillment and abundance in the world. And so it's a very fulfilling thing when we show people that anyone can shift this, just like flipping a light switch. It can be that profoundly instantaneous when people have breakthroughs. And so I want to just encourage anyone to not suffer needlessly, to not be resigned to just that's who they are and that they're not changeable. Anyone can change in an instance if they have the tools and they have the commitment to do that.
Yeah, having the commitment to do that for ourselves, it's a really valuable place to get to. And I know that a lot of times we'll make excuses for others, even if we get to that point for ourselves. And that's what I thought was really interesting about the common myth about self-esteem. The point that you're making in number 10 is people have a right to their emotions. It's not fair to deny them the right to be angry when they have been wrong.
Well, you know, Susie, I hear that all the time, where especially the indignantly angry people we hear that from. You know, I have a right to my emotions. I was abused as a child. The world has treated me poorly. I come from the ghetto, or I've lived in poverty all my life, or, you know, I have a physical affliction that has kept me down. Life is not fair. That anger oftentimes comes forth in such a way where people actually get a lot of personal power from feeling sorry for themselves. And it's not as though I am just so humbled when I hear people's stories of the abuse that they've been through and survived, of the terrible, dramatically painful situations they've grown up in, the lack of love that they've endured, the terrible financial suffering. All of these things are very much real. And so it's not as though people don't have a right to all of their emotions, because, you know, people have been through some very challenging things. But the question is, does it support them to be stuck there, to dwell on feeling sorry for themselves? Does it support them to actually be angry all the time because of what happened when they were 5 years old? You know, it's not that they don't have a right to it, but what it is that it's time for them to move on, to get off of feeling sorry for themselves or being angry at someone else or feeling like a victim. All of those feelings allow people to have a false sense of power. You know, they get to dominate someone else by being angry at them and avoid being controlled, or they get to feel powerful in that way by feeling as though they have hatred toward a race, for example, or a group that have been mean to them. It could have been just a bully in the schoolyard that they're angry about, or, you know, a parent who abused them, or whatever that is. But the fact is that when they get what it's costing them to stay stuck and to stay angry and to stay in these emotions that don't serve them, then it oftentimes is just a matter of moving onward and forward and really having a life that's fulfilling and happy, as opposed to staying stuck in those emotions.
That's a lot of information to cover, but I think that we're going to be able to touch on some more of it as we go through and talk about number 11. All families are dysfunctional. Anger, sadness, and fear are just a part of life. I think a lot of people have found a way to just work through their issues by making some of the common myths that you've touched on, and especially these last two, that the anger, sadness, and fear, they're just part of life, and there's no escaping these moods. So I'd love to hear you just expound a little bit about that.
Well, first, with respect to the all families are dysfunctional, you know, I hear that so often from families that don't want to look at how they can be less dysfunctional. They justify their dysfunction by looking at other dysfunctional families. And I will tell you that there are a lot of families that are dysfunctional, and there are a lot of families that have their acts together, and they have a lot of things going for them. They have loving, caring relationships. They have positive ways that they affirm each other. They have ways that nurture each other's greatness and make people feel good about themselves. And so not all families are equally dysfunctional. All people are human, and so as humans, we all have our frailties and our shortcomings, and it is possible to have a very functional family, to have a family that is committed to these power principles that are personal development guidelines that move them forward in a way that allows for the ability to be happy and healthy and wealthy and abundant and fulfilled. And so that is possible. Now, getting to the second part of myth number 11 about the moods and that there's no escaping that anger, that sadness, or that fear, that is totally a myth. Anyone who wants to stay in their mood does so purposely, because if they don't know the tools, that's one thing. But with the formula that we teach to support people to let go of their anger, to release their fear, to get rid of their sadness, they will see that those moods are totally optional. And that everyone has a total ability to manage their own emotional response. We can't be responsible for what someone else does. The other person can be angry. The other person can be afraid or sad. And we might be able to support them to move out of those. But if someone else is angry, for example, there's no reason why we need to be angry. There's no reason why we need to react to someone else's state that doesn't support them or us. We absolutely can learn the tools to manage our moods, to recognize the signals where they're coming up, to reinterpret what's going on in such a way that we can handle those states so that we can take a stand, so to speak, for being functional, for being magnificent, for supporting our family members and those that we care about, of being excellent and striving to be happy and fulfilled and all of those things that we all want.
Oh, I absolutely endorse and love the concept and the idea of using all of the breakthroughs and formulas that you champion, that you teach, that you cover in your work as power tools for our family and our corporate and business teams. That would be excellent and a great recommendation for anybody, but also really exciting if the more people we get turned on to these kind of tools. So myth number 12, in cases where severe abuse has taken place, the abused person has a right to be hateful and vengeful because they were seriously wrong.
Well, you know, Susie, we're not condoning hurtful behavior. Oftentimes, people misinterpret what we talk about with the ability to move on from what happened as condoning it. And it's not right for a child to be abused. It's not right for hurtful things to happen to people. But it doesn't support people to stay stuck in the anger or the sadness that that abuse created. It doesn't support people to stay less than magnificent out of interpretations that they created because of it. So one of the things that's entirely possible is, instead of maintaining that right to be angry, that vengeful nature, you know, people feel as though they hang on to the hatred, they hang on to the feeling of vengeance, that they'd love to kill someone or they'd love to get even with them. And as a result of that feeling, not only do they diminish themselves and keep themselves in a low energy that has them stay angry and sad and fearful, but it also doesn't support their magnificence in moving forward in forgiving people for what they've done. Not like it's okay again, but forgiving, I like to think of as thank you for giving me the opportunity to experience something that made me wiser and more sensitive and more empathetic and a better person. And so there is always the ability to reinterpret the sad things, the hurtful things, the painful things that happen in one's past in such a way that we learn from them, we grow, we offer the insights that they've given us to make it a better world, to enhance our ability to impact others' lives, to really give us the ability to be all we can be. So there's always a positive interpretation or spin we can put on whatever happened to us. And, you know, a good example of that are the people that perhaps had a serious accident early on in life. And that can lead in one of two directions. They can feel sorry for themselves. They can, you know, end their life and be miserable. Or they can go on and they can be an example to others. Christopher Reeve was just a great example of what is possible when someone doesn't take that anger or that vengeance or that sad mood out of something that happened that was wrong and unfortunate and not fair. But they actually take what happened in a way where they use it to improve their life situation. They use it to improve their ability to contribute to others' lives, and they use it to gain in wisdom and in empathy and in love and strength.
Wow, that's an awesome and exceptional example and some great tools that you covered right there. I hope people are taking notes, and I'm glad they're going to have a copy of this to re-listen to. Okay, myth number 13. Only the extremely intelligent or the gifted athletes or the people with movie star looks can have it all. The rest of us just do the best we can to get through the challenges of life. Can you discuss that a little bit more with us?
Yeah, Susie, that basically says having it all is for other people, that you don't know my situation. You don't know how little intelligence I have, or you don't know challenges that I go through in my life. You don't know how damaging my relationships have been. You don't know the pain I've gone through. What that myth I'd like to debunk is that it's not just the perfect people, the gifted athletes, the people with movie star looks, the extremely intelligent people that can have it all. It's any one of us. And what happens typically is that we focus on what's missing. We focus on where our shortcomings lie. We focus on where we're imperfect and not good enough, as opposed to acknowledging our strengths. And one of the things that we can do instead is we can start to pay attention to the things that we do well. We can acknowledge ourselves for the places that we shine, for the qualities that we have that actually are remarkable and magnificent. And we can actually develop those qualities further. So life is really a choice for people. We get to focus on what we want to manifest in the world and what we want to put our attention on to make real for us. So we can either feel as though we're resigned to not having it all and suffer and feel sorry for ourselves and feel as though we just don't have the tools to move forward, or we can be extraordinarily creative. We can be committed to moving our lives and our relationships forward. We can be committed to contributing to other people and to causes that make us feel as though we're accomplishing something worthwhile, as opposed to being resigned to the fact that we're not good enough to be that rainmaker, to be that person that's actually making the difference for others, to actually create an inspirational sort of example for other people. And I say that we can have it all, and we can be that if we make the decision to do so and we have the courage to act in alignment with that decision.
Exactly. And I know that you are a commitment that people not live in resignation, Joe, and so many of your tools point us in that direction. So I'm thrilled to have you talk about this next myth, myth number 14. By the age 40, there's not much one can do to reverse a low self-esteem.
You know, Susie, people use this myth to justify not being responsible for moving their lives forward. And I can tell you that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or you're 80 or you're 108. If you have your faculties intact and you are clear about the options that you have in life of moving forward or staying still or stagnating and reversing backwards, you have the ability to use the tools that we teach in the self-esteem book and the self-esteem course and the personal development success code materials, all of the other tools that are available to support people to be the best that they can be. Age is nothing more than a justification or an excuse not to take responsibility. And by responsibility, I mean having the ability to respond powerfully and with velocity to move in the direction of honoring your values and making your vision manifest in your life. So I would encourage anyone at any age to really look upon it as though they have the ability to lead the rest of their years in such a way and lead their lives in such a way that they can absolutely impact a result. They can be happy. They can be fulfilled. They can make a difference in the world and for other people. And you can do that at any age.
Exactly. And it's so inspiring to hear you comment on that. I think I actually heard someone speak those words just last week about the fact that if you haven't accomplished a particular thing by the time you're 40 or 50, and they weren't necessarily talking about self-esteem, but anything. So I really appreciate your comments and the inspiring encouragement in addition to the tools you put in place and the formulas and materials. I want you to comment on myth number 15. Elevating one's self-esteem is a long and painful process. This could be something that really does hold people back, that they the anticipation of what they think they're going to go through. So let me go back to our myth number 15. Elevating one's self-esteem is a long and painful process that can take years to accomplish. Will you just address some people's concerns about that? I'm sure it's very real for a lot of people.
Well, Susie, not only need it not be long and painful, but it can be instantaneous. It comes with an aha experience, which is a breakthrough in one's thinking. And it's supported by a formula, actually, that we offer people in the self-esteem book, in the self-esteem coaching, and in the self-esteem coursework, where they now have access to new tools which help them to flip that light switch that I referred to and instantaneously shift out of resignation into personal power, shift out of a feeling of unworthiness into a declaration of magnificence, to shift out of suffering into possibility. So no matter where people are, the good news is that it starts with the decision, and the decision starts now. It's a decision to be the best you can be, to be happy and fulfilled, and to learn the tools that support that. Or the option is to stay stuck, to stay what you've been doing all of your life, to stay resigned to the fact that happiness and wealth and abundance and great friends and rich relationships and intimacy and all the things that are important in life are for other people. And so that myth I want to totally debunk, and I want people to know that it's now to make the decision to make the rest of your life something worth playing for, so that you would actually live your life purpose that's honoring your values, that's in alignment with the things that are most important to you, where you actually get to make a difference for yourself and for others. And so I'm so passionate about the idea, Susie, that anybody has that ability right now to make that move, that it's never too late, and that elevating self-esteem can happen instantaneously when you decide to be on that path. So anyone that is listening to my words today, I'm going to invite you to make this be that crossroads point for you. I envision us as being at a crossroads, shaped kind of like a Y, where at the fork in the road that forms the Y, we have decisions that we can make. And we can go on the left-handed path that is the path that we've always taken. That's the path where we feel poorly about ourselves, where we don't have the tools to move out of our poverty, out of our unhappiness, out of our broken relationships. And we also have a right path. And the access to taking the path that leads to happiness and fulfillment and abundance and great friends and relationships and healthy communication starts with a decision. And so my encouragement to all of you listening is to make that decision today. Make the decision to make the rest of your life based upon a declaration that you have for what it's going to be like. Is it going to be happy because you declare it to be happy? Is it going to be powerful because that's your commitment? Is it going to be abundant and full of wealth and plenty because you're committed to making that so? Or is it going to be in alignment with the disempowering evidence of your past, where you're stuck there and you don't believe in yourself and you don't take responsibility for getting the tools to get out of that state? So I want to leave everyone tonight, Susie, with responsibility. And responsibility being that everyone has the ability to enhance their self-esteem, to feel good about themselves, to take the magic wand that we were given at birth that we forgot that we had for all these years, and to wave it over our lives and to see that if we take responsibility for getting the tools and for developing the principles and possessing what we call the distinctions that lead to happiness, that lead to success, that lead to abundance and fulfillment. All of those things are possible with the decision. So I'd like to just leave people with a challenge, and that is not to be resigned to leading a life that's anything less than fulfilling, magnificent, abundant, happy, full of love, full of great things. We all have that as our birthright. And so if there's one point that people take away from this call today, it is that we need to be in choice about how we're going to direct our lives. The tools are there. The question is, will you take them or will you stay stuck? Will you feel sorry for yourself? Will you stay in that resignation that keeps you from being all you can be?
Thank you so much. I want to remind everyone where they can get their hands on these tools and let people know that was a discussion of 15 common myths about self-esteem with Dr. Joe Rubino. He's an acclaimed personal development trainer and a life-changing success coach. His work is widely endorsed in the personal development arena and in the business arena. And you can get in contact with him and get a hold of his material and more information by visiting www.centerforpersonalreinvention.com, and all of that is spelled out. And one that's even more direct for the conversation we were having today, the website www.theselfesteembook.com. That's theselfesteembook.com. Or his 800 number. You can contact him toll-free at 888-821-3135. And I can't thank you enough for your time today, as well as all of your material and your support work for people in being all that they can be. Thanks so much, Joe.
Susie, it's my pleasure, and thank you for leading this discussion. You and I have discussed the fact that we did this together because you've been through the work and you have an appreciation for it, and I appreciate your contribution to so many as well.
Oh, my pleasure, definitely, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.